Today, we're chatting to Tiffany Gessler, proud Aboriginal Gungari woman who's a space holder for women, children and mothers and specialises in early childhood education, outdoor education, Aboriginal health, midwifery and women's business. In this fast-paced world, Tiffany strives to connect us to our own nature through honouring the seasons and cycles of the land and connection to country. Be it exploring the bush with a group of children or supporting a woman in birth, Tiffany's work all comes down to a love of holding space for families. Last year, Tiffany launched the first private bush school in Toowoomba called Sow and Nurtured, with a strong vision to bring the community together to support well-being, getting children outdoors, truth-telling and reconciliation through the land. Can't wait to share this episode with you today, as Tiff is also one of our Wild Business Course participants, and it's been such a pleasure to watch her and her business flourish.
Welcome to Raising Wildlings, a podcast about parenting, alternative education, and stepping into the wilderness, however that looks, with your family.
Each week, we'll be interviewing experts that truly inspire us to answer your parenting and education questions. We'll also be sharing stories from some incredible families that took the leap and are taking the road less travelled.
We're your hosts, Vicky and Nikki from Wildlings Forest School. Pop in your headphones, settle in, and join us on this next adventure.
Hello and welcome to the show, Tiff. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Really excited to have this chat with you.
Yeah, me too. It's been in my mind anyway for a long time, so I'm glad that it's finally coming to fruition. But before I jump in, because I will go like a rabbit through the gates, would you like to lead us in an acknowledgement this morning?
Yes, I'd love to. It's something that I really love to do in a different way to a lot of the other spaces, particularly if you're in health or in your, you know, government or in meetings or even at the schools. It's like a little bit of a tick list to get over and done with. And my pet peeve is that when you hear them finish and they go, "Enso," and they continue with their meeting and you hear the words "Enso." So I really invite everyone to just actually slow down for a moment and really heart listen to this one. So if you like where you are, you're welcome to put your hand on your heart, perhaps close your eyes down. And we're just going to slow down, listening to our own breath and our own rhythms and our own body. Coming back to our own nature first, so we can wholeheartedly listen and become aware of the space around us. May we all acknowledge the custodians of the land country you're on today. May we learn their stories, learn their truth. May you walk, grow, learn, work, and raise your children on this land, knowing it's sacred. May we acknowledge the first people of this land and how they lived in harmony, our mother, the connections to our mountains, the trees, the waterways, the animals, our totems, and our connection to the sacred. May you now acknowledge the country in this moment, the wind on your skin. Depending where you are, you might be feeling the warmth from Father Sky. You might be hearing the leaves rustling around you outside your window. Even if you're inside four walls, you can still connect to country. Just bringing that awareness that this building is built on sacred ground below. May we acknowledge the ancestors and your ancestors, how you come to be here today. May we acknowledge our children. May they grow knowing where they've come from. May they know this land has stories, strengths, wisdom, and sacredness. May we bring reconciliation together for our future. I personally want to acknowledge Indigenous First Nation people listening. I send my love out to you. Any mob out there? I also want to acknowledge my Gungari people and where I've come from. My maternal lineage. May I make you proud using my voice today, as I know you didn't get this privilege. And one big deep breath for yourself before we come back to reality. Open your eyes.
Oh, well, teary.
Yeah.
That was beautiful, Tiff.
So just really bringing that awareness to what acknowledgement is. What are we acknowledging to the land is a really beautiful way. It doesn't have to be that in depth. I just knew that most people listening probably have a pocket of time. But if you're doing it with the kids, you'd be doing what's around you. Normally the birds will start speaking to you as we're doing it. The wind picks up and you can really feel the spirit around us. So really when you're doing that acknowledgement, even if it's a song or a dance or something with the kids, really bringing that awareness for them to connect to the land.
Mm. Oh, that's so, it was so needed, isn't it? I'm actually going to say, I have a list of questions for you, but I'm going to skip right down to the bottom and talk about that need for that relationship with land. Can you talk to us about that and even your relationship with your country, the country you're working on in this day? What are your favourite things about that country? All of it, but.
Yeah. I'm really blessed to be living, and I'm a visitor to where I'm actually living. This is not where my people or my ancestors actually lived. I'm in Toowoomba. But I've been born and I've been raised here, and I've also birthed my own children here. So I'm a visitor to this space, and so I really take on that privilege and duty to acknowledge the land here. So most of that is actually probably caring for the land and that relationship. If I care for her, she cares for me. She's a refuge and a solace for me. Growing up, we were actually disconnected with our families from culture. Through history, which I'm sure we'll go deep down later on, we're disconnected and moved from our land. So while we didn't have culture as such and we didn't get to hear the song lines and the wisdom, we felt it in our body, in our DNA, and our grandmothers were very connected to the land. Even despite being taken, we were brought up knowing and how to support ourselves with the land and listening to the land. My most favorite memory that I can first remember is my grandmother. We were sitting under the she oak trees and she got me to listen, to feel. You can hear it almost out west here. You guys are closer to the salt medicine, but out west here it sounds like the ocean.
It does.
Through the she oaks. Yeah. So I have that memory really embedded in me. And yeah, I think I asked that question. But yeah, pretty much that connection to the land and relationship to the land it's like our own family, our own mother. And that's not just for Aboriginal people. Your ancestors would have been just as connected to the land. And you'll perhaps still feel that relationship to the land because it's in your DNA. In your blood as well. If we didn't live with the land and relationship with the land before Woolworths, Coles, and you know, we would have probably starved to death because we weren't living with the seasons and the cycles and knowing when to harvest and to grow. And so we all have that connection.
It's so important. If you're not connected to land and to country, how can you go about, I guess, taking those baby steps to take? Because a lot of it is fear. It's fear of wildlife. It's fear of even just getting muddy and dirty and, you know, what's going to hurt me, which I think for you and I, I'm well beyond that, and I find comfort and solace being on country. But how do we go about, especially if it's cultural, you know, we have other cultures living here, so they've moved from overseas, and so it is a real deep fear. What kind of baby steps can then people take to try and break down those fears and those barriers?
I feel starting in your own backyard, everywhere is sacred, even in the middle of Brisbane or middle of Sydney, in that cement areas and the big buildings, it's still sacred ground. You're still seeing Father Sky. You've still got the sun, feeling the warmth on your skin. Hopefully there's trees and some kind of nature around you to connect with. But, yeah, even our own nature, feeling in our own breath, we are nature. We're not separate. We've been told all along that we are disconnected and we're separate to her, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And we are nature as well. So depending on the scale of things of how anxious you are, but just stepping into your own backyards and really acknowledging that beauty around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously your parks, even if it's not native, like it's still nature as well. And then, yeah, I would be just keep pushing that threshold, exploring. Even in your own car, driving in the car, you're still surrounded by country you can connect to. But obviously that bare feet on the land or that connection directly to the land a lot better than being in a car. But, yeah, I'm just sharing different scenarios that it's all around us. Even in my room right now, I can see the sun and the shadows of the trees. So there's always that awareness, that knowing already around you.
Mm, I love that you're right, and that we are told by the media and whoever else, you know, the theys, that we are disconnected, but that we're not. As disconnected as you feel, you can't help but be connected. And I actually have never thought about that. I always just think of people as being disconnected, but you're right. You can't possibly live here and breathe the air and have the sun on your back. And yes, thank you. Thank you for that reminder. It's really poignant. So we met through Wild Business, and you have started a beautiful business, Sowen Nurtured. Can you tell us about your journey to starting your own business? And I'm particularly interested in what was your inspiration to start? And then what was the straw that broke the camel's back? What was the thing that you finally went, oh, speaking of, I've got a blue-faced honey eater just tapping on my window. Oh. You were saying that it comes and says hello.
As soon as you listen.
Yeah.
It's just that listening and that connection, looking around, awareness, yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious. They all are always out here this time of year in the Banksia that we've planted out here, but I've never had him come and tap on my window before. So thank you for that gift. I really am interested in the straw that broke the camel's back that made you take the leap. Because I think a lot of people listening go, I would love to, but, or, you know, I could, but I can't because of this. So can you walk us through that, your story?
Yeah, so it's actually a story that started from me working in early education, working in beautiful spaces that allowed me to have roles as an outdoor educator. This was before it was trending and before, sustainability sort of came a big hot word.
Yeah.
And I was just scratching my head thinking, sustainability is something that, you know, my people did for thousands and thousands of years. You know, it's not just composting, recycle bins and, you know, worm farms. So I was really lucky to be in
Nailed
a space
it.
To give me that, yeah. I was really lucky, though, to be in this space where that was heard. And so they gave me a role. And so my job was to weave in sustainability but also Aboriginal perspectives. And so my thing was to bring the children outdoors to have this relationship to the land, because if they're connected and have this relationship and have these memories, we're going to have the caretakers of the land. And when they grow, they're going to care and love this land. They'll want to look after it. But if they don't have this connection, they're not going to know what they're caring for or what they're protecting. So, yeah, my biggest thing was to actually do a little bit something left field but still very connected to that, was sharing how the land is cared for and also the connection to the land. So I also worked in different spaces like community schools, where I sort of had these pockets of being able to do this, but it still wasn't full freedom to be what I wanted it to look like.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm very grateful for these little opportunities, yeah, I just wanted to be out, bring the kids to bush, because it was still quite safe. We were only going to parks or, you know, paddocks or something like that. So I think what really broke or really put the fire in my belly to get to jump was probably COVID, seeing a lot of the stress and anxiety, not only because I also worked in healthcare. So amongst all that happening, everyone was really trying to get indoors and hide. And I was doing the opposite. I suppose I wasn't rebelling, but I was like, the antidote's to be outside, to be connected to the land, to for all this stress, I mean, also for our well-being and our health. You know, being locked up in hiding and in fear wasn't, you know, going to support. And I really set working in both healthcare and in education, I saw the kids really stressed. And they were coming up with all these different anxieties and germaphobe sort of feelings. And, yeah, it really broke my heart to see that. So, yeah, the antidote was getting outside when we could. And, yeah, it really, I think wanting that freedom to do it on my own. But I did have those fears of others probably are having that because I'm a single mum also. So it was really making a big leap to trust that it would all work out for me. And it did. It just kept on working out, working out. Then we were homeschooling. So I was doing it with kids in the backyards of the different homeschooling families. Yeah, and then, like I said, it's sacred even in your backyards. But I really wanted to get the kids even more, you know, connect to the bush, more wildlife, more that connection and bringing in that truth telling and the Aboriginal perspectives and caring for that land as well. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much my story in a nutshell. But what really brought the fire in my belly, obviously it was always there, but it was the kids and seeing them so disconnected. And it's almost like an obligation in a way that I knew that the land is such a beautiful space to hold us and to, it's the antidote to this disconnected world that we live in. That's the go, 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 busy, the schedules, the be there, be over there, be back here, and just constantly fast-paced world that our kids are feeling. And we all know that the kids are feeling it. We only have to look in, which is probably another rabbit warren to go down, but the schooling systems and the, yeah, we all know, most of us listening are knowing that our kids are not, it's not working. And it's not working for everybody, whether it's Aboriginal people or anybody. It's the whole colonized system doesn't work for all of us at the moment, particularly.
That's a beautiful segue, because I wanted to talk to you about, we obviously are called Wildlings Forest School, and I can imagine that's a slap in the face to First Nations people everywhere when it's such a, it's a colony word, you know, it's a colonized concept. How can we as forest school or outdoor leaders, whatever you want to call us, decolonize our practices? Because it is whitified, it is colonized, we are working on stolen land. What are some of the ways that we can, A, firstly acknowledge that, and B, start doing the work to really break down those practices?
Yeah, before I speak, I really just want to bring that acknowledgement that, or that awareness that I'm not shaming when I speak this and there's no judgment.
Yeah.
Because I know this is a hard conversation or hard to hear from people as well. There's a lot of guilt, a lot of shame. But if we don't have these conversations or bring this awareness, we're not changing. And what doesn't change doesn't change.
We need to have uncomfortable conversations, and we need to eliminate the white fragility as well around it.
Yes.
Work on it.
Yes. And there seems to be people who only want to hear so much and then it gets too hard. But that even in itself is a privilege. But what I want the listeners to is to invite an understanding that this is a responsibility for our future and for our children's future. And it doesn't, it's not just for us Aboriginal, us mob, who you're not doing it just for us, you're doing it for yourselves as well, because you've been colonized. Everyone's been colonized in the Western world.
And it's not working.
And we can all come. No, and the way we live together is going to support everybody. So to decolonize your spaces, I think, is really that coming back to your own self and decolonizing your own stories. We're not at that level yet, thinking of our spaces and our children. We're just coming back to our own stories and knowing where we came from. So I would invite you to look at your family history. Where have you come from? Where did you settle? Know that you weren't the first to settle in that space. But just knowing where you were born and where you've come from, where probably your grandparents or even your great-grandparents, depending how young you are, understanding where they've come from and your roots, because that's also going to benefit you, knowing your story and where you've come from. And then knowing from then forward the privileges. So while I know there's all sorts of diversity that's come here to Australia to this is out there now, their home. Some haven't come from good backgrounds either, and some have come here for refuge. I understand that. But there also is a big gap of privilege. So understanding and even looking around you, do you see Aboriginal people in your, city or your way of work? How many Aboriginal people do you see working there? I'm thinking schools and hospitals in comparison, how many Aboriginal people do you see working in these leadership roles? We need more of us as leaders working in the spaces. So just having that acknowledgement that you're in a privileged space when you have these leadership roles, particularly in a space when it is to do with nature and teaching and being on the land. And then I would be looking at, okay, I'm privileged and I have this opportunity. What can I do with this privilege? How can I support? What can I do with this privilege? Rather than just unconsciously, going on about your business without realizing. So they're really big conversations and really big reflections on your own self. And it will probably bring up some yucky feelings, but beyond those yucky feelings then comes action, awareness. So it's not something you're going to have in a day, be decolonized or have that awareness in one day. It's a constant. Yeah. Even for my own self, I'm aware that even I perhaps would be privileged in comparison to mob up north who are living in conditions of poverty in third world conditions and having all these health concerns and health issues and just depression.
Food affordability.
And deposition, yeah. Financial freedom is another one to reflect on, is that even my own grandmothers weren't paid to work. So there's a big gap there, and it's probably more my generation that are finally getting out there to have this financial freedom.
But there's that missing of that generational wealth because of that, right? Because your ancestors weren't paid for generations. The generational wealth is barely starting in this generation. So there's a huge amount of privilege that white people have over First Nations mob, because these generations weren't paid.
Exactly. So, yeah, that could be a big hard pill to swallow for some people to hear, but I'm not saying, you can still work on your spaces. There's only 3% of us in the population. We're not coming out to take away from you either. But before reconciliation, there needs to be truth, and you need to have that awareness. And yeah, so then I would be looking at how we can then reconcile and bring without the hero capes, without being a saviour, how can you walk with us then moving forward, knowing this now? I really think a good practice I like to do, because like I said, I'm a visitor here too in this particular space, is when I go to work on this beautiful space that I'm in, I really think about the people before me who were on the land, the children that played on the land, I think of the women's business and in the harvesting, and I think of the men doing their business out because we've got a sacred mountain we can see from our space. So I'm really acknowledging and feeling into what was happening beforehand. So when I'm then bringing children to play there, I've just got that awareness that that is a privilege even for me to be there with these children.
Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful. I when I first came down to our space in Nambour, I remember thinking that same thing. Just, I wonder how many generations of people and mob have played here, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, and what a privilege it is to that this space is actually even still here. Like, I'm so grateful that there's spaces left for children to play like that, because, gosh, I know there are in a city, Brisbane, like you said, and there's so much more concrete, and these spaces are, they are decimated. So, yeah, I want to touch on again without, you know, making it about white saviorism, but paying the rent and also the ways that maybe as wild businesses you can pay the rent. So one of the ways you could possibly do that is bringing in an equity discount for BIPOC folk. Even in our staff meetings, we're reading a text. Every staff meeting we have, we break down a chapter, and it might be on white saviorism or white fragility, and it still astounds me. And our team is fairly, I would say, in Australia, which is a really, really sad thing to say, are fairly educated on First Nations perspectives, and we are missing huge chunks. Our team are missing huge chunks of history. We're missing huge chunks of understanding. We're missing so much. And so just trying to bring in those things where we're educating ourselves and not relying on First Nations mob to be constantly educating us, because that's a big thing. It's a big weight, hey, on everybody's shoulders.
Yeah. So the colonization, decolonizing is not us mob. It's for you doing the heavy lifting. Yeah. I love that though. I love that in your meetings, you're exploring different texts and, paying the rent in different ways. There's many ways that you can pay the rent. And that could be, you know, caring for country, signing up for something that brings even reconciliation through the land, supporting land care. I don't know what you have in different spaces, but here in Toowoomba we have working bees under the council where we weed invasive weeds with friends of the escarpment here. There's so many things you could do for caring for the land, but then obviously there's listening to diverse voices and what do the elders want you to do. You could be hearing the voices of mob around. How do they see it? Because we're so diverse. There's like 400 or even more languages and mobs around Australia. So there'll be different needs depending where you're listening from what that means. And I love that there's discounts, which I have been able to do as well, and also been on the receiving end. Because, like I said, there's that gap, freedom gap between, finances or even just getting to the location, especially if we're in bushland that's not accessible to the suburbs or the cities. There could be travel to where you have to go, so having those travel discounts as well. Or even just putting on once a term, you invite, there might be a Aboriginal health centre or I don't know where you're living, it might be even Aboriginal kindergartens, so you can invite them to come out one term or, you know, once a year even, something, and to support those kids that probably aren't getting those opportunities, unfortunately.
That's a beautiful idea. I can think of actually one in Brisbane I'm going to put my team onto. I hadn't thought about that. That's a great. It's so simple. Like our staff are so keen. So any ideas like this, if we can throw them out, we might even start a list of ways that we can pay the rent for as wild businesses. And even as parents, like you said, I love the idea of just reconciling and connecting with land and giving back to the land is such a simple win-win for everybody. You know, it's so nourishing for everybody to do that together as well.
Yeah.
Mm. I know other businesses that donate, you know, there's businesses that do 1% for the planet. Well, they do 1% to First Nations, either businesses or not-for-profits, depending on what business they're in. There's so many ways you can do it.
Yeah.
We work with community centres as well. And just if there's anyone in a community centre that needs a day in the bush, then they just come.
Yeah.
You know, just there's just ways that you can even do it without having to, which is going to sound terrible, reach into your pocket. But I know when you're starting a business, giving cash is not easy to do.
Mm.
But you can give time. You can give time, yes. You can give spaces in your programs. You know, there's other ways you can give back.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. So on that, some of the amazing work you do is go out to early years centres and settings and show educators how to bring in Aboriginal perspectives. What are some of the ways that you love to see early year settings do this?
So walking into centres and also having experience working in different early education spaces, the main thing, there was a lot of tokenism, and I think it's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But your perspective is going to be different to Aboriginal perspectives or what you think the kids need to learn. What I'm saying is that we're not, take away the whole, let's sit down and learn about Aboriginal people today. Let's sit down and learn about Aboriginal culture. In particular, let's do it because it's NAIDOC week or Reconciliation week. Mm. And then the rest of the year there's crickets, there's no conversations.
Yeah.
You've got the Aboriginal flags come down and all the beautiful, displays come down for the rest of the year. So I've seen that in centres, but I've also seen beautiful centres that I've walked in and I'm like, what do you want me for? Because you're doing a beautiful job. It feels so culturally safe and I can tell that you've done the work. Your staff are doing the work. You're doing it every day and it's embedded. It's not just once a week kind of thing. I think private schools are actually a space that seem to do it just for NAIDOC week, for example. So I think embedding it in our early education spaces is really just talking about it every single day. It doesn't have to be a sit down, let's learn this. It can be a question or an open-ended reflection that you can learn with the children. You don't need to have the answer. So, for example's sake, I know it's spring's coming around, so you might be starting to plant some new things in your gardens in the spaces. So you can together think, I wonder what Aboriginal people before us would have been planting at this time of year. What is a land doing now? What's flowering now? What can we put into the spaces that reflect the season, what's going on and what we can eat and grow? What's going to benefit the animals and bring in more animals for us, like the bees and the the butterflies and the birds? So you may not have those answers, but you go together with those questions, and the kids are pretty connected and awesome, and they'll have ideas. And maybe they're doing hubbies, and you might just be thinking that's not work. Like it could be falling over all the time, and they can't work it out. So you'd be like, I wonder how the architecture of shelter for the first people that built here. What did they use? Were they using bamboo, or were they using, the timbers, the wood from the eucalyptus, or the different trees that are around in the space? That's a really good question to ask, particularly if you've got a lot of European trees around. You'd be thinking even further, what's actually native? Particularly if you're in a park, those botanical parks, that because the Europeans missed their home. They planted all the flowers and the trees that they missed. And I can't say that for all parks, but, a lot of parks are like that. So, so just exploring with the children. And it's embedded every day in conversation. And you probably don't think these little conversations are doing anything, but I can tell you from years and years of experience, the kids are really taking it on. And it's probably a more connected way for them to learn, because they're learning through play. They're learning through exploring with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not being an expert. you're sharing with the kids, you're learning as well. So that would be my advice for Aboriginal perspectives in your spaces. And then, yeah, that's on your thinking, learning side of things. Then you've got the well-being and the connection and the even your acknowledgements every single day that can be embedded. So, yeah, I think just starting, take it back a little. You don't have to have these big grand programs or curriculum. Most of it's just through communication, conversation and connecting through that way.
Yeah, they're such little sponges, aren't they, the little children? They just, like you said, and I think you've nailed it when you say that when they're on country and their hands are in the dirt or they're touching the trees and you're having those conversations, some of the things that my children have remembered from 6, 7, 8 years ago from what I thought, exactly like you were saying, was a passing conversation, and it's sunk in because they were maybe touching the sap or they were laying on some paper bark and we were talking about it. And I just think, gosh, it's conversation, it's story, isn't it? And talking about the land like she is alive because she is.
Yeah, exactly. And for Mob, we didn't have books or curriculums or schools. We learnt through the conversations, through the stories, through the songs and through the land. So, and like, how do we get from 80,000 years ago to here with still having this knowledge despite having, you know, the disconnect and the things that have happened to us in history? We still have this deep knowledge despite all of that.
Yeah.
And that is because we spoke it through the land, through our stories, through our people and our elders that have this wisdom that they pass on. And yeah, they're not sitting there thinking, oh, today we have to learn this ABC sort of thing to make sure the kids know. Yeah.
Let me just visit my textbook.
Yeah. It's through that embedded community, which is a big strength for us, is that community and families and relationships. Yeah, because we always get sort of, like, I notice that we hear a lot about the bad things that have happened to us and the weaknesses, but we don't speak so much about the strengths. I'm really acknowledging that that is a strength of ours, that despite everything that has happened, we are still here. We still have this knowledge. Perhaps in some spaces it's just gone to sleep for a little while, but it's still all within us, and that wisdom and that those knowledges are being passed on just naturally through our voices, which is why I feel very privileged today to speak, because my grandmothers couldn't, even though I was quite anxious to speak sometimes. It just comes, blurts out, because I know I'm not speaking just for myself. I'm speaking for my family and my ancestors. Ugh. So, yeah.
That's so powerful. And again, I think people forget, people choose to forget, or it's not in their consciousness, how long Mob was silenced for, you know, when you couldn't speak your language and you couldn't practice your customs and your rituals and the dances and use language. And like you said, the strength for you to and I hate saying the word, you know, resilient, because no one wants to be resilient forever, and an entire culture shouldn't need to continue being resilient and strong. Like, at some point we need to have these safe spaces where you can just be and not be strong and resilient all the time.
Yeah.
But gosh, the fact that knowledge has been so protected and passed down is just, it's a bloody miracle. And so grateful for that. Oh my gosh, I've got so many questions, Tiff.
That's okay. I can yarn about it all day.
So I'm going to drag us back to wild business for a little bit, because I'd love to know what the hardest part of starting your business has been, or what the hardest part of your journey, so whether it's a start or post-startup, what's the hardest been, and what do you wish you'd had more help with?
So I'm very much feeling the gratitude for having you guys to have that support, because I felt very alone. Like I shared that I'd been working in these spaces, in the early education spaces in particular, where I still felt quite alone. I was like dragging people to, you know, listen, or dragging the teachers to understand that there was a different way. So it's really been really good to have that people that understand and have that same passion to get the kids outdoors and in business, because we've got people outdoors and getting out there, but not necessarily in business. Mm. And particularly here in Toowoomba, it hadn't happened before in a private setting. I mean, like, no. There was a few daycares I'm aware of. So from what I'm aware, I'm one of the first ones to do it privately. So
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And probably that would have been the hardest, I think, was that I was, like, while I'm very proud that I was the first, it also felt quite, alone in all that. Because a lot of the Toowoomba people weren't 100% understanding what it was going to be as well. So it was sharing with the families of what my vision was. Some of them had heard of Wildlings and yourselves, or had been down and travelled down to you guys. So
now they don't have to travel. Yay.
Yeah. And most hadn't actually understood what exactly it was. So it took a bit to share that we're not a school where you drop off and go. This is actually a space that you are going to be a part of, although I did have drop-off programs too. But, just sharing that it's a different thing, especially Toowoomba. While I'm very grateful for Toowoomba, but it feels a little bit conservative. So we are still got a long way to go. And unfortunately, it is a space where a lot of racism happens. And we're also in a space where a lot of the custodians of this land are not here today because of, they were displaced into missions or, you know, we've had massacres around Toowoomba. So, so there's something bigger than me really wanted this to happen also for the land, for reconciliation and for truth-telling. So while it was hard, there was something bigger than me that kept me going, despite all the fears and the worries and definitely a few lows. As you're learning that imposter syndromes and wondering what it even is going to look like, because you have the vision but it's unfolding and you're just really clinging on to that. But, it's so beautiful and it actually has worked out even better than I thought. Opportunities coming in. Yeah, it's while I vision the kids out there, it's even bigger and epic, and I know this is only just the beginning. And it will continue to unfold and grow. And, so I'm really excited to see where else it's taking. Now these foundations are being laid. And then I'm aware there's another one that's just started as well at Highfields. So I'm really excited to see that these Toowoomba kids are getting these opportunities. It's really good to see.
Well, the ripple effect of your programs, and particularly with your knowledge and your stories and the history and your passion and purpose, I cannot wait to hear and see the ripple effects of, like you said, it's not just taking kids out bush. It is completely going to change. I hope the culture around and the stories we talk about nature and the connection that we all have with nature. And I honestly think this is it. It will change what, not just Toowoomba, but the spaces where all of these bush schools are popping up. I do believe this generation that's coming through are going to protect our land better. And maybe I'm an optimist and rose colored glasses, but the talk that I hear these children talk about, I never heard in a classroom. I never, ever heard children talking about nature the way that the children in these programs do, and that gives me such hope.
Yes, goosebumps. I feel that too. Yeah. And working with kids, I'm probably sharing my age a little bit now, but I think it's going on two decades nearly. I've been working in early education, amazing, particularly since I was 17. And I don't think it was just my ignorance. I actually do see the kids changing, and they're feeling more, they're more even defiant as well. Like, they're just so, they want a world different, and they're sharing that. And you can see that, and they're keen for this as well. And I hope without burden, which is what I'm trying to share.
Yes.
While we have these kids so connected and understanding, if they have this nature and these spaces for solace, that the burden will be less, because they're doing it in relationship with the land, and it's embedded in their lives.
What's the best part then about owning a nature play business? Let's say other than seeing that ripple effect, what about for you personally? How was owning your own business, whether it was a wild business or not, but particularly a wild business, what's been the best part of that for you?
Mostly freedom and flexibility. Like I said, I homeschool, so I'm working hours. Like, I used to work shift work and night shifts and 9 to 5s, and now I'm still working hard, but it's really working with the rhythms of what I'm feeling for balance myself. And I also work in women's business spaces where we really connect to our own rhythms of our womb. So I'm really mindful of, how much I'm giving in certain areas of my cycle as well, which is just rippling into my home, because I've got a teenage daughter as well. So I'm able to be there with my kids as a single mum too. I think this would benefit anyone. I'm not sharing that that's any different, but I'm just saying that I've opened up opportunity to be more present in the home, because this is something that's lighting me up, and also supporting, our lives. And I get to call Mother Nature my boss. So that's the most amazing thing to say, that I'm working for her. I'm not working for a system anymore, and I'm not working I'm working for what's working for us, that we're designed to do. And I really love that, and it's supporting me in my body and my mental health, and beats working all night long and then sleeping all day against the cycle of what you need to be doing.
Isn't it? I would 100% agree with you about being able to honour your cycle. It's on day one for me, you will often find me on the couch, even on a work day, I just don't work, or I'll just do the things, I'll follow the dopamine that feels okay, and anything that's too hard, it just leave it for my do phase. I'm in my do phase now, and I will get through my lists. Nice. And I power through them.
Yeah. When you gave me the invitation to come talk, I actually looked at where I was going to be. So I could have easily booked it last week when I was in my winter, but I made sure I wasn't. So that's honoring myself. And if I'm exampling that, I'm hoping what I'm doing now will example for my children. Because we talk about burdens, about, supporting the land and that connection, but I think the system's already burdening. It's already a burden. So we're really actually supporting by doing this work, because, these systems are already a burden on our kids when they want them in their 9 to 5 and, working here and there.
And it's such a patriarchal system, the 9 to 5. Men's testosterone works in a 24-hour circle, but women's doesn't. So to expect us to do that every 24 hours when, like you said, our winter, we need to recover and recuperate and heal and cleanse. Let's get us in our do phase, and we'll move mountains. So let us.
And that's honouring that nature in us, and, ripples on to that wanting to support and be out and out, the outer nature and the season, brings that awareness.
Decolonising ourselves. Oh, so good. So Let's go, because it's, I love that, Tiff, you've got, we cover everything with us. It's like nature and your business, but also homeschooling. Can you tell us about, again, similarly, what was the thing that made you take the leap? And then what's been the best and hardest part of your homeschooling journey with your family?
Yeah. So I haven't always homeschooled. So, but always thought about it working in education. Mm. I knew that the system, the public system, wasn't going to work for my children. And mm-hmm. I actually still sent my daughter there for her first year in prep, despite those big feelings. So I haven't always thought, you know, this is what mm-hmm. we're going to do. But she shared with me through her behavior and her mm-hmm. her body and her big emotions that it wasn't going to work. And oh, that time of my life, I just remember how mm-hmm. hard that was, separating from her every day, knowing that she wasn't in a space that she was thriving. So she was my biggest teacher in that. But we did actually mm. find a learning community that I did work for as well in the end, a beautiful space where, yeah, that Toowoomba had here. Oh, nice. But, yeah, things changed. Things obviously, yeah, just being mindful there that I'm not dissing anything, but the system still creeps in those spaces yeah. too. And while I have so much gratitude for this space, mm. it equally didn't end up supporting my son either, as he really craved that land and that connection outside. Mm. So if he had big emotions, it was lovely that the teachers would just know that if he climbed up the tree, you leave him alone. He'll be back down in 5-10 minutes. And so he had those beautiful mm. teachers and spaces that allowed that there. But unfortunately, that did change a little bit. So I was questioning, while also questioning my own ability to jump into working outside, working for myself. It all sort of unfolded all at once with a big kick up the bum again mm. with having my son now teaching me that this space also wasn't working. So, and that's our personal experience, as mm. I understand all children are different. So I wish we homeschooled earlier, because I've absolutely loved it. The freedom and, but even like learning through their interests, and I would say we're probably more unschooled because we don't particularly do anything as far as you know, workbooks mm-hmm. or anything like that. We're mostly learning through the land, learning through our garden, backyard yep. garden. So community is a big thing for us. And it fills up my day and my cup. So I'm learning and feeling that connection all along as well. And to see his body soften, like I get emotional sometimes talking. Hopefully you won't get too emotional. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
I'm just thinking about it.
That he would have, and it's just so tense. And then he's just so, his body's so soft now, and he's just such a different kid, honoring him and what he's wanting to learn and what he's wanting to do, and the friendships and the community that we have also have been a part of homeschooling mm-hmm. as well has been absolutely beautiful. So yeah, I really am so grateful mm-hmm. for that, for this opportunity to do that for him. And my just for our home as well. Yeah.
Mm. Just being able to honor your culture like your children and family need, I think, is, you know, it, the way our schools are set up, you know, we talk about embedding First Nations perspectives, but there's no way in a curriculum. Sorry, there is a lot of ways mm. we can, but there's no way we can get kids on country like they need to be to yeah. be in touch with culture like they need to be, you know, like it's,
no,
it can't provide no. that in a classroom. Mm. Mm. And again, I know that's a privilege. I know that's a lot of people, whether that's resources yeah. or time or whatever, I know that's a huge privilege. But it's such, we're doing such a disservice to a mob
mm.
keeping kids in class, or to any child,
yeah.
but particularly to mob by keeping kids in classrooms. It's just, It's not a natural way of being.
No.
For anyone.
And that's why you see kids, in particular mob and communities, are struggling in schools because, yeah, they know deep in their blood and their bones that it's colonization right there, that you have to be schooled. And in our generations before, were taken from their families to be schooled.
Yeah.
So it's really intergenerational stuff there.
Yeah.
But I do see some little pockets here and there of hearing of programs, you know, taking the kids out. And I know particularly here in Toowoomba there's a boys group that go out and do things. And a friend of mine works up north in a community school, and they're working hard to get by the river each day or certain times of the week through their schooling. There's different things.
Yeah, I know Benny at Noosa Flexi School does a lot of work on country too. So there are pockets, but it doesn't seem like it's in the mainstream schooling system either. It seems like you have to almost extract the children out as well, which, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing. Far better off on country and being extracted. But again, it's that separation from community that's happening then as well. It's almost, yeah, it's,
yeah,
there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But hopefully if there's more pockets like this, setting examples too, that we did a little bit of work with kids at risk here. And, you know, there's only one or two mob, you know, kids in the community here in that group. But they thrived. Oh, my God. They were so skilled and so confident and just flourished in this program that we ran. And I just went, gosh, this is,
yeah.
Like, I know the reason they're in this program is they're not feeling that success in an academic classroom. But look at this young man thriving and stepping up and leading and his peers looking up to him. Like, why can't we do this? There's no reason we can't do this in a school. Like, we have so many beautiful schools with beautiful grounds. It drives me batty. I can't imagine how batty it drives you guys.
Yeah, let's just put them all in a small classroom and control them this way. But then you're putting out fires the whole lesson because they're, you know, they're bouncing off the walls.
Yes.
I don't understand how it's not. And I'm not saying don't send your kids to school necessarily. I'm just meaning that there's better ways that, you know, we've been schooling, even the curriculum's not really changing that much. Like, I know that a lot of the curriculum's very much the same, like even from when I went to school, and it's just not changing. And I think, I can't remember the statistic, but I think, was it 10 years' time? And only, you might know this bit more than me, 10 years' time, there's only going to be like 80% of the jobs are going to be not what we have today and what we trained for. So there's going to be different kinds of jobs. I think it's perhaps not the quite right statistic there, but you know where I'm going is that, you know, we're sending these kids there for something they probably won't even need because there's all these different jobs that will be changing.
No, because AI will be doing it. Yeah. Exactly. It's going to be the skills that machines and AI can't code for, isn't it? It's going to be community and relationships and leadership positions that these, it's going to be really interesting. And I hope our schools can keep up. I know I was speaking to teacher friends that they are currently not keeping up, particularly with the AI at the moment. But I'm hoping to get an AI expert on in the next hopefully month or so because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, me too. I'm mainly intrigued because I think that it could open up so much. It could explode our education system very quickly, I think. And if it does that, it opens up more creative jobs and jobs that people want to do rather than need to do or feel like they should do. And hopefully that could be really great for humanity if that's where it goes.
If it stays in there, I'm happy.
Exactly.
But when you start intellecting our actual bringing intellection into our own, you know, bodies and health and even our land, then that's that to me is colonizing as well. I worry a little bit hesitant because of that. But I'm pretty open-minded too, so open to change because, yeah, the way we're doing it now is not working.
No, but it does seem like we need a bit of an ethics board for these AI that's kind of running ahead of everyone that created it too. But, yeah, hopefully we'll find out a bit more when I'm waiting to hear back if we can book this person in, but we'll see how we go. Oh, Tiff, I could honestly chat to you all day, but let's move into our rapid fire questions. So what's your favorite book of all time and why, or podcast or anything, or what are you currently reading if it's too hard to choose?
I have books everywhere. I start reading them, put them down and start another one. So I'm just thinking favorites. I'm just going to say Victor Stephenson's Fire Country is a big one for me, with that caring for country in the old ways. I think we very quickly forgot about the fire and all that was going on in Australia at the time, because then all of a sudden we had the floods.
Mm.
But I do feel, you know, the season is shifting again, and before we know it, we have all this fuel for fire again, because we've had the floods and the rain, or particularly here in Queensland, I mean. So I think it's something that we need to be mindful of again. And I know that there's these beautiful programs actually happening where they're caring for country through these old ways. That was probably a big one for me. Songman by Bob Randall is a big one that really impacted.
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Oh, he's a beautiful man from out, I think it's Bundawa out that way. Speaking of the spirit of the land, he was a stolen generation, and I think it was his father who was a white man and his mother is Aboriginal. So it's that journey what I resonated with, having walking the two worlds of the white and, you know, your Aboriginal family, and coming back together and reconciling for yourself. So that was a big one. And he speaks so beautifully about the land and that connection, and even particularly when you've been disconnected, how it calls you and you feel it, and how the land remembers you. I think I'll leave it at that, because I could probably talk all day about all the different. But, yeah, I just really urge to diversify your podcasts and your books that you read, that you're listening to different voices, particularly Aboriginal voices here, because we're so diverse even in our own mobs, but we have so many stories about the land. So we're very lucky that we've got a lot out there at the moment, but even reading different times, not just the modern ones today, go back and read ones from the 90s and the 80s, and it's really interesting to see they're speaking pretty much exactly for what the modern authors are speaking today. It's very much the same. And so that's a good thing, but also a bad thing, because you think, well, that's a 30-year-old book and nothing's changed. So it is still really good to listen and read, though.
I'm going to put Songman on my list for sure. It's one thing we try and keep our library nice and diversified, because it's so easy. Again, we're Sunshine Coast is very much like Toowoomba, but we're white conservative here, so it's really important for my family just to have different books on the shelves and different voices as well. So
there's so many beautiful children's books too that are coming out, which I'm so glad to see seeing it in mainstream. Going back to Bob Randall, he has a documentary as well called Carnini, and he has some children's books as well. I love how he speaks about the land, that before Cleopatra, we were here living in harmony. Before Jesus walked the earth, we were here living in harmony. So it really gives you that time frame of how ancient we are, and how a lot of the European countries get travelled and explored and really honoured for their buildings and their land and all these different, you know, monuments. But here we have thousands and thousands beyond. Like here, even in Toowoomba, we've got a 6,000-year-old site, and that's just one example. You know, such ancient things here in this very land that we can, you know, homage to.
Yeah, and honouring that, you know, yeah, the caretaking that has happened for this country to be in the state that it was when, you know, white men came and colonised is phenomenal. You know, the beauty and the agriculture and the fishing and the, you know, the way that it was set up for longevity and for generations and generations is just something that's not celebrated enough.
No, or protected. Like, we've got mining companies blowing up sacred caves and sites and paintings and, but then Nostradamus burnt, when was that? I can't remember. And everyone in the world was raising $1 billion to save it. And it's only like how many hundred years old. And actually, Ella Bancroft, she's an amazing, strong Bundjalung woman that speaks a lot for community and particularly for mothers and families. She's actually over in Europe at the moment and speaking the same, how it feels so odd to, you know, almost like really so in awe of these places. I think she was in Greece, for example. But she's like, oh, yeah, it's cool to see, but, like, it's not in comparison to what we feel here with the ancients here.
She's an amazing storyteller, isn't she? I follow her too. It's just her way with words is just magical.
Yes. She's doing a beautiful, amazing work for charity for Mob. So, yeah, I actually was down there in February and was really grateful to be able to be a part of that. It was just a camp of, I think, about 120 women. And, that was the first time I've ever felt the most love, I suppose, as far as what community could look like. And just the passion for the mothers and the women there. Yeah, it was beautiful. And even having, because a lot of the attendants, like she gives scholarships for Aboriginal women, but a lot of the attendees were actually white women. But just to see so many women cheering who were non-Aboriginal, I've never felt that before when they were listening to her and her mother. Her mother's Bronwyn Bancroft, who has beautiful kids' books, actually. I just never felt that before, that amount of cheering and excitement and support. So, yeah, someone that I really recommend supporting her charity, actually.
There we go. You're looking for places to pay the rent, then there's an amazing place you can send.
The Returning, send that love. It's cool.
Oh, I love that. Yes. Here's to more strong women and more voices being heard. So on that, where do you go, if you're happy to share, and obviously you might have your spaces that you don't want to share as well, where do you go to reset after a tough day, or what do you do?
Yeah, that would be going out on country. And it actually is a space that I work with the kids here in Toowoomba, because I actually care for that space of land as well, so I have that relationship to there. If it's not there, I'm normally finding just a really big old tree to anchor with. And like I said, the backyard, like, I'll be getting my hands in the dirt, because reality, sometimes I can't get in the car and run away. So I'm just putting my hands in the dirt, pulling some weeds and caring for the space of land I have where I live. And if things are really big, we're getting in the car and driving 6 hours west back onto country along the Maranoa River. We go out there when we can. Unfortunately, it's hard to get out there being so far, but when things are big, we go out there for that solace and that connection and that support.
Amazing how land can hold you like that. It knows, I swear it knows when you need to be held. Yeah. If you had to choose just one thing to change about the education system, what would it be?
One.
Yeah, we could have a whole podcast.
I actually think, was going to say get them outside, but I think it actually would be just listen to our kids and give them voices, because they have they're amazing, beautiful children that have voices that are not being heard. And there's obviously hierarchy and egos and control. But if you're listening to their kids and what's on their hearts, they're going to feel heard and supported and loved. So, yeah, just love on the kids and connecting. You know, I've worked in these spaces and thinking, you know, things are happening in a room and it's getting big. My first thing to go to is, okay, let's sit down and connect what's going on for these kids, because it's more than what you're seeing in their behavior. Something's that they're needing to hear or say or, yeah, so that's why I actually do have a soft spot for those kids that get labelled naughty or get labelled with these behaviours, because it's usually that they're just, yeah, needing that space to be held and heard. So, yeah, including our own children in our own home if you're not in those spaces.
What's that saying? Something about the children that don't get the most love are the ones that actually need the most love, or something along those lines, or the ones that are, you know, almost pushing you away are the ones that actually need the most love.
Yeah.
And last of all, you've got more than one business. So where can we find out more about your work or works?
I wish I had time for starting this website stuff, but I haven't got there yet. So you will find me on Instagram under Soul and Nurtured or Facebook. And if you are interested in any women's business kind of things, connecting to the nature of you and your cycle of you and the seasons of you, I work in a beautiful space here in Toowoomba called She Gathered. And you can find me under Woman Nurtured, where I used to speak a little bit on my Soul and Nurtured page about all this, you know, birthing and bleeding. But, you know, the audience wasn't ready for that, right beside a post about being in bush school. So I recognize that wasn't what they wanted to hear. So I separated the two. Yeah. Even though I find them so interconnected and related, working as a midwife, it's so interconnected and related.
They are, aren't they?
But yeah.
Yeah. I feel you. I feel like that's how I came to this work, was through birthing and parenting. And yes, I was a teacher before that, but I was a different person. Mm. I was a different teacher. Yeah, I know what you mean. It is all connected. We can't separate parenting from children.
No.
So we can't separate bleeding and birthing from children. But
yeah.
One day it'll all be together, because we will have, we will understand. Saying that, we've separated our two businesses because it was almost too much to have business and programs together as well. It's such a funny space, the online space, where
you have to niche
it's
yourself,
really hard to show I find it really frustrating, because no humans are just one layered. You know, we're all such layered, multifaceted beings, and it's pretty frustrating to have to split your time and effort and energy into two separate spaces when we are, it's just you and me behind these spaces.
Yeah.
But
exactly. I agree.
Funny little space. And so is the best way to get a hold of you, say, if you're an early years educator and wanting to bring you into their space, whether that's for consult or for them to come to you for excursions, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Oh, so, yeah, I have an email that you can reach me
through
on.
Through Insta?
Yeah. You'll be able to find me on Instagram or Facebook, and then I do have an email.
Beautiful.
hello@nurtured.com.au.
Beautiful. Highly recommend absolutely doing that. If you're looking for someone in the Toowoomba region, Tiff's your gal. She's an amazing practitioner and so passionate and purpose-driven. And I just can't wait to see, having followed your journey, obviously not before, you know, you started while business, but if your very first email to us was just a giant yes. I was just like, I want to see where you are in 1 year and 5 years and 10 years. And I just know that you being in this space and doing the work that you're doing is just going to make such big change. So thank you for, I know it is carrying that burden, because I know it can be a burden. And thank you for that, because it is making change. I can see it already.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing me and supporting and It was really a kind of a big deal for me to talk to you today because I listened to you guys when you first started the podcast, and I think it was at 2020. I feel like I've been listening to you for a while.
Yeah.
And I actually, I think
COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys sort of like through the podcast were even supporting me in my journey of going homeschooling and, you know, not feeling alone, hearing these people out there that all have this passion for the world and the kids and nature. And so, yeah, thank you as well. And, Vicky as well. Thank you for supporting me in my wild business.
I love it. Honestly, I say this probably every week, but I love this part of my job because of that. Like I don't think any of us realize, and I don't think you will even see the impact that you're having already for years. Like when we started the podcast a couple of years ago, we were doing it for ourselves. It was COVID and we were like, what can we do? And we want to speak to these people. What's the best way to do this? But we get this, like this delayed kind of, not gratification, but like the delayed impact, I guess, is so far reaching and it makes it so extra worthwhile because I just have loved spending this time with you. But I also know that there'll be someone listening right now that in 5 years will go, that podcast that I listened to with Tiff either made me take the leap or I, you know, thought I'd try homeschooling or we booked her and now we have this ongoing relationship to land or like it's just, it blows my mind and I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us and you can check out Tiff at Sewn Nurtured in all the spaces. Please support her work and we can't wait to, we'll have to get you back on again because like I said, I've got another bazillion questions. We'll break that up to another episode.
Yeah. I just want to send some thank yous and love out to the listeners too, knowing that what we spoke about is a really big conversation. So thank you for doing the work and listening.
It is. There was a lot of layers in there, even just for schooling. And I often don't reflect until after the episode. And I go, oh, gosh, I'm sure I make a lot of people uncomfortable. But thank you if you're still here.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's, you know, it's all of us sitting through uncomfortable conversations that is going to make change for the better for everyone, not just the chosen, you know, few, you know, billionaires.
Yes.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I hope you've had a great restful couple of weeks and that your programs are beautiful and blossoming and it's such a beautiful time of year to get back on country too. So, yeah, until next week, stay wild. Thank you.